Welcome to your midday NTD News. I'm Emily Ho. Hurricane Dorian is still battering the U.S. coast, for now churning offshore for northeast Florida. The state's residents are beginning to breathe a little easier, despite bracing for predicted storm surge flooding, while the Carolinas are on high alert.
Dorian, currently classed as a Category 2, has weakened significantly from its Sunday peak, but those in its path are still facing a dangerous storm surge, heavy rain, and coastal erosion.
You know, we've been under mandatory evacuation for days. We look like we're going to take a big hit, and every track that we've seen since then has been more encouraging.
But as the storm moves north, Georgia, the Carolinas, and southern Virginia have their guards up. Dorian is picking up speed and expanding despite lessened wind speeds after days of slowly marching up the coast.
Storm surge is more prone to large hurricanes, so the threat of a very, very severe storm surge along the South Carolina coast is growing larger at this point.
Dorian Center is expected to pass near the South Carolina coast by Thursday, while the possibility of the storm making landfall has not been ruled out. By Friday, heavy rains, wind, and flooding are projected to impact North Carolina and Virginia, but Dorian Center will move out towards the Atlantic Ocean by nightfall. Dorian may track close enough to bring rain and some wind to southeast New England before it quickly races towards parts of Nova Scotia and Newfoundland later in the weekend.
Homes torn to timbers and vehicles tossed like toys, littering whole neighborhoods as rescue teams continue to fight flooding to try to save those still stranded in the northeastern Bahamas.
Survivors waving to the helicopter as it passes by, marking the locations of the survivors. Aircraft were not able to land because the airport was underwater and debris everywhere. Already, seven people, including an 8-year-old boy, had been confirmed killed as the strongest storm ever to make landfall in the island nation moved toward the southeastern U.S. coast. More police and security forces are expected this morning to prevent violence and looting. 60,000 people may now need food relief. Some of those rescued were exhausted after spending all night clinging to their roofs or stuck in their attics. NTD News.
Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam today announced the government will formally withdraw an extradition bill that has sparked months of protest.
In a pre-recorded television message, Lam made the decision in response to concern from Hong Kong citizens.
First, the government will formally withdraw the bill in order to fully allay public concerns.
The bill, which would have allowed extraditions to mainland China, where courts are controlled by the Communist Party, triggered months of unrest. The protests against the bill began in March, but snowballed in June and have since evolved into a push for greater democracy. Withdrawing the bill is one of the protesters' five demands. Next comes setting up an independent inquiry to probe police brutality, withdrawing the characterization of protests as riots, releasing those arrested at protests, and implementing universal suffrage in Hong Kong. Protesters have also called for the release of those detained without charges, but Lam said this was unacceptable and refused the other demands.
On dropping charges against protesters and rioters and shelving prosecutions, I have explained that this is contrary to the rule of law and is not acceptable.
Lam made the announcement after meeting with pro-Beijing lawmakers and cabinet members Wednesday afternoon. Months of protests have started to ripple through the economy, hurting some small businesses and the tourism industry. NTD News.
Hong Kong pro-democracy lawmakers and activists denouncing Carrie Lam's decision to withdraw the extradition bill as too little, too late.
Pro-democracy lawmaker Claudia Mo said the protesters are adamant that all their demands, including calls for direct elections, are fulfilled.
The damage is done. Scars and wounds are still bleeding in Hong Kong. She thinks that she can use some garden hose to put out a hill fire. That's not going to be acceptable.
Some lawmakers said the move should have come earlier. Michael Tian, a moderate pro-Beijing lawmaker, said withdrawal alone might have been enough to calm the protests in mid-June, but now it's not about the controversial bill anymore. I worry that the decision comes too late now because people have shifted their focus.
Although withdrawing the bill is a step in the right direction, it does not guarantee the protest will stop, as there are still four demands left unanswered.
From Taiwan, Hong Kong democracy activist Joshua Wong, a key figure in the ongoing protests, said the demonstrations would continue until all their demands were met.
Our determination and courage to fight for freedom will still continue. When we experience the police brutality and the crackdown of human rights, we will have even stronger determination to continue to fight for free election.
Many are furious at the police brutality and number of arrests, 1,000 at the latest count, leaving a society deeply divided.
The Hong Kong people won't accept this. Just yesterday, the police searched people on the bus. Why did they need to search everyone on the bus? Every day, the police are treating citizens violently.
So even though the bill is withdrawn, many issues need to be resolved. But Carrie Lam didn't talk about those issues and only said the bill is withdrawn, so it's not very helpful to society. It is not clear if withdrawing the bill will help end the unrest. The real test will be how many people take to the streets next. NTD News.
U.S. Secretary of Defense Mark Esper has signed off on $3.6 billion worth of Defense Department funds to build 175 more miles of wall along the U.S.-Mexico border.
A Pentagon spokesperson said half the money will come from military projects in the U.S. and the rest will come from projects overseas. Pentagon Comptroller Elaine McCusk said the projects are not being canceled but deferred. In a letter from Esper to the Senate Armed Services Committee, Esper noted that President Donald Trump had issued a proclamation on February 15th declaring a national emergency on the southern border that requires armed forces. He added that the projects will deter illegal entry, channel migrants to ports of entry, and reduce the demand for Defense Department personnel where the barriers are built. Those units can then be reassigned to protect areas along the border where there is no wall. Construction on the new sections of the border wall is expected to begin in 135 days.
A new video from the U.S. Coast Guard showing the boat that burned in Southern California early Monday morning, killing 34 passengers on board.
A little after 3 in the morning on Monday, someone made a Mayday call reporting the boat was on fire. Only 5 crew members who were awake and on the deck escaped alive. 20 passengers have been confirmed dead, while 14 are missing but believed to be on the sunken 75-foot tour boat called the Conception. On Tuesday, the U.S. Coast Guard announced the suspension of the search and rescue mission for the missing.
We have suspended these search efforts due to no additional individuals having been witnessed entering the water. Our last aircraft overflight this morning has revealed that no additional signs of distress.
Friends, family, and even strangers left flowers, candles, and flags on the docks of Truth Aquatics in Santa Barbara, a makeshift memorial for the victims. Truth Aquatics is the company that operated the Conception.
The showdown in UK's Parliament continues. Prime Minister Boris Johnson has gone toe-to-toe with lawmakers over leaving the EU with or without a deal. He may be facing defeat, though, as British lawmakers, including 21 from his own party, are trying to pass a bill to block a no-deal Brexit.
A war of words between Boris Johnson and opposition leader Jeremy Corbyn in the House of Commons as Johnson faces a fresh battle over Brexit.
What do we want? What do we want? Dither and delay. When do we want it? We don't know. That's his policy. That's his policy. And can he confirm again, can he confirm now, that he will allow the people of this country to decide on what he is giving up in their name with a general election on October the 15th? Or is he frit?
Jeremy Corbyn!
Mr. Speaker, my first question to the Prime Minister, and no answer given.
The Queen recently agreed to a request by Johnson to shut down Parliament for 5 weeks, starting as early as September the 9th. The suspension gives less time for members of Parliament to pass legislation that would stop the UK from leaving the EU without a deal. A Scottish court ruled on Wednesday that his decision to suspend Parliament is lawful. Less than 60 days to go before the Brexit deadline, that's Halloween, and there's no shortage of drama in the House of Commons. On Tuesday night, Prime Minister Boris Johnson lost a key Brexit vote, 328 to 301 votes, paving the way for British lawmakers to pass legislation blocking a no-deal Brexit.
Not a good start, Boris.
A no-deal means the UK leaves the EU with no withdrawal agreement in place. The next election is scheduled for May 2022, but if the bill passes, Boris Johnson has pledged to push for an early general election to be held next month. For it to happen, it would need backing from two-thirds of lawmakers. Of those who rebelled against Johnson were 21 members of his own party, including two former cabinet members. They have effectively been sacked from the Conservative Party for voting against Johnson. If an election happens, people may be voting along Brexit lines rather than the traditional party lines.
I mean, it was already the case in 2017 that people were switching between Labour and the Conservative, with Leavers going towards the Conservatives, Remainers more inclined to go towards Labour. I suspect we will see more of that. Tradition and loyalty will matter less than it did even in 2017.
The showdown continues in Parliament later as lawmakers vote on the legislation designed to block a no-deal Brexit. Reporting in London, Jane Werrall, NTD News.
U.S. Senator Ted Cruz calling Huawei a state spy agency on Tuesday and warning that sharing intelligence with nations whose infrastructure provides a direct backdoor to China is beyond foolish.
Huawei is a state spy agency, masquerading as a technology company.
Cruz said on Tuesday that China is the most important long-term geopolitical competitor of the United States and that his threat far exceeds that of Russia. He is most concerned about outer space and cybersecurity. He also stressed that the U.S. must use all means to make it clear to its allies that they should not use Huawei equipment.
Particularly for the Five Eyes partners, if we're going to be sharing intelligence with nations that have allowed their infrastructure to have a direct backdoor to China, that is beyond foolishness.
Last week, the Wall Street Journal reported that due to national security concerns, the Justice Department is opposing a submarine cable project involving Google, Facebook, and a Chinese company. The cable would connect Los Angeles to Hong Kong. The Chinese company involved is Dr. Peng Telecom and Media Group, the fourth largest telecommunications operator in China. It has a long-term strategic partnership agreement with Huawei. If it can control the cable, Beijing would then have access to data, intelligence, and could monitor a large portion of the world's internet.
Ownership of this undersea cable just gives them the ability to ramp up their surveillance state.
Last month, the Department of Commerce extended Huawei's temporary license to purchase products from U.S. companies for 90 days. At the same time, it added 46 Huawei affiliates to its entity list. Duesterberg applauds the move, but hopes that the Trump administration will not grant a waiver to these companies to try to reach a trade deal with China.
A separation between the national security concerns that we have and trade policy is a necessity. We cannot mix up the two.
Reporting by Kitty Wong, NTD News.
Michigan is set to become the first U.S. state to ban the sale of flavored e-cigarettes, citing the product's appeal to kids. Governor Gretchen Whitmer says the ban gives physical and online stores 30 days to comply and lasts 6 months, but can be renewed. Michigan is also banning misleading marketing of vaping products, terms like clean, safe, and healthy. This targets messaging that vaping is harmless. The state's health department warned that youth vaping is becoming a public health emergency. Proponents of vaping say e-cigarettes can help wean people from combustible cigarettes, which have known carcinogens in them. Whitmer argues that vaping is more dangerous than what people know. And in Texas, one of the largest supermarket chains in the U.S. responded to the tragic shooting that took place under its roof. NTD's Miguel Moreno has more on Walmart's decision to stop the sale of handgun ammunition.
It's a response to the El Paso shooting that left nearly two dozen dead and its two associates in Mississippi also shot and killed. Walmart's CEO stated that the supermarket will discontinue the sale of handgun ammunition, ammunition for military-style weapons, and lastly, stop selling handguns in Alaska, the last state it sold them in. We spoke with the executive director of Texas Gun Sense, who said that one of their concerns is easy access to firearms or ammunition.
Walmart is ubiquitous across Texas, across the country. So it should have a significant impact on gun safety.
The CEO also said he would encourage Congress and the president to consider what he called common sense measures, such as stronger background checks and removing weapons from those determined to pose an imminent risk or red flag laws. Switzer said her organization supports red flag laws or extreme risk protection orders, adding that they believe in responsible gun ownership. But those in opposition believe it'll be hard to determine who is and isn't at risk and could even lead to the violation of an individual's rights. Walmart also no longer wants customers to openly carry firearms in its stores. Miguel Moreno, NTD News.
White House advisor Ivanka Trump in Colombia today, saying that women entrepreneurs are critical to the Latin American nation's future well-being.
Ivanka Trump made the remarks at a launch event for the Academy of Women Entrepreneurs, or AWE, a U.S. government-funded initiative aimed at reducing barriers to women's economic participation.
AWE, as it's otherwise known, appropriately, is designed to equip women with the practical skills they need to create sustainable businesses and to participate more fully in the global economy. This is particularly important in Colombia, where women play an increasingly critical role in the country's economic development and continued transition to peace.
Colombia has long been the United States' closest ally in the region and is the first stop on Ivanka's Latin American tour that will also include Paraguay and Argentina. Ivanka, who was accompanied at the event by Colombian Vice President Marta Lucia Ramirez, said that 40 Colombian women will initially benefit from participation in the program.
Former Secretary of Defense James Mattis is on a book tour in New York, and despite being pressed for comment several times, Mattis refused to talk about the policies of the current administration, saying it's not his job, and instead calling on the nation to switch from being divided to being united.
During his appearance at the Council on Foreign Relations to promote his new book, General Mattis said his job is to do his duty when asked, and that it wouldn't be right to just start talking after leaving the job.
We've got a president and a secretary of state and a secretary of defense trying to protect this great big experiment that you and I call America, and I'm not going to make their job more difficult by a former secretary of defense speaking now for what I would call the cheap seats, not responsible for anything, up there talking about it.
He said he will leave that debate and assessment to the American people.
I've got a lot of trust in the American people.
Mattis also called for stopping the divisiveness in the country, saying people should leave the next generation with a country that's in good or better shape than they inherited it.
Elections are about dividing in order to get elected. I understand that. But governing's about uniting. And right now, we seem to stay in a constant election mode. And I see us as, let's just get together and figure out how to solve the problems together.
Mattis was appointed by then-president-elect Donald Trump and served as Secretary of Defense since January 2017. He resigned in January this year. Mattis also addressed the ongoing pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong. He said the authoritarian mode the Chinese regime uses against its own people makes it hard to believe that it will treat foreigners any better. He says the U.S. can no longer be mired in its own desire and should see China as it is. It needs to cooperate when possible, but confront the regime when it must. Penny Zhou, NTD News.
A Catholic school in Tennessee has removed the Harry Potter books from its library after the school's priest decided they conflict with Catholic moral values.
Father Rehill, a pastor at St. Edward Catholic School, said he consulted exorcists in the U.S. and Rome who recommended removing the books. In an email obtained by the Tennessean, Rehill wrote, "The curses and spells used in the books are actual curses and spells, which when read by a human being risk conjuring evil spirits into the presence of the person reading the text." Rehill said that the characters in the books promote a Machiavellian approach to achieving the ends they desire. Whereas, he said, "Catholic moral theology teaches that the means and the ends must be good for any good to come about." Catholic Diocese of Nashville Superintendent Rebecca Hamill said Rehill sent the email after a parent asked about the books, and she said he has the final say at school. The move isn't the first time the Harry Potter books have been banned from an educational setting. Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI even weighed in on the controversy when he was a cardinal, writing in 2003 that the books deeply distort Christianity in the soul before it can grow properly. NTD News.
Moving over to a popular Ecuadorian beach in the seaside town of Same, dozens of endangered baby turtles unexpectedly hatched on Monday.
Last year, 11,000 turtles were born in Samos province, but the shift to new breeding grounds indicate humans were disturbing traditional spawning.
It's extraordinary. Since Same Beach didn't have any record of turtle nesting before, it could be because of the amount of light and infrastructure. The new spawns have taken place in a private enclosure, and it's not lit all the time.
The olive ridley is among the smallest of the world's seven species of marine turtles, usually spawning on the coast of Central America, Ecuador, and Peru. After 25 years, they return to the beach where they were born to breed again. Females dig a pit and lay more than 100 eggs, which hatch together at night around 50 days later. For anyone observing the hatching, Casanova recommends not intervening with nature. Sanctions have been established to punish those who are caught stealing the turtles.
We have seen merchants taking the turtles and selling them in glasses of water. We have seen tourists who, when trying to help them, their bone structure is very fragile. They dig to help them but break their limbs, things like that.
The local government cordoned off the areas where sea turtles were sighted on Same Beach. These little ones hatched on a beach volleyball court. NTD News.
And that's all for today's NTD Midday News. Join us again this evening. I'm Emily Ho.